Hello and welcome to this episode of Gin and Tonic Tavern Talks. We're going to discuss some of my favorite homebrew items. Most of these I made up myself, and most of these you will look at and scream they are broken. And they probably are, but that's what made it fun.
And I don't know what any of these are, so any reaction from my side of the table is completely genuine.
Most of these all come out of my first campaign. They were, the game got a little ridiculous. And I'll spare you the long story. There were several items that popped up over it, and in no particular order, most of them come from that campaign. The first one being the Invisible Longsword. It was a +1 longsword that was completely invisible all of the time.
Question.
Which,
if the sword is invisible, does that make any blood, gore, and or assorted viscera also invisible, or are those still visible?
If they're touching the sword, they are invisible. If they fly off of the sword, they become visible.
Very cool.
So it granted advantage on the first attack in combat with it, because it didn't look like you were holding anything. After that, they're aware there's some shenanigans going on. Of course, it made for an interesting scene when somebody dropped it. The party then spent 10 minutes combing the floor for a sword that was unsheathed and invisible.
Don't drop the sword.
Yeah, they after that were very, very careful not to do that again. Because they were on a boat, and the boat was rocking.
Oh, even better!
Yeah! It was a bad place to drop it. At least he was below deck, so it wasn't like it was going to fall off. But like, and wave! Clatter, clatter, clatter! Oh, there's a sword playing around here. Deck saves.
Yep.
He did eventually find his sword, though. He did recover it, and that was one of the best homebrew items.
That sounds just, like, phenomenal fun.
Another one that was wielded by the same player, but was actually designed... It was an idea that one of my players had that he wanted to give another player a weapon. But he explained the concept of what he wanted, and he wanted a mace that was on fire. But not magical.
Okay.
So this got interesting. So we went with, I can't remember whether it was a round, like a ball, or the shape on the end is really irrelevant. But what's important is that it had a hinge. The lower half was solid, and the upper half could hinge open, but otherwise was locked, and then had a bunch of holes in it. And you would unhinge it and stuff it full of wet oil rags. And then at the drop of a hat, you could stick it in a fire and light it on fire.
Brilliant.
There was a beholder that was really shocked when it stared at him, and he was like, my weapon doesn't stop. It's not magic.
Yeah, That was smart, the request for it to be non-magical.
And it worked. There was a minor mistake, perhaps, but at one point the party found two separate items. One was a bowstring that replicated the whatever you shot with it from 1 into 3.
Oh.
And then there was a bow that every arrow shot with it was immediately filled with necrotic damage.
Okay, that's badass if you put those two together.
That's exactly what they did.
Yes.
It was meant to be It was meant to go to two different players, and they recognized that these items were meant for two different people, but it was just too ridiculous not to put together.
Absolutely.
So now this player had a... How did that one work? The bow, when it hit, was like 3d8 necrotic, 3d8 radiant damage. Oh. And then he was a rogue.
Oh, my goodness.
So we're going to come back to that, because that played in really well with this next item.
I'm excited.
Now, this next item was kind of an oops, because I had given them this book and said it was written in Absol, and I kind of hyped it up. And then I forgot about it. Very bad. Because one of the players was like, oh, by the way, I read Absol. What's in that book? I'm going to send that to you later, because you're going to have to spend some time studying it.
And you have to figure out what it says.
Oh, yeah, I had to scramble. And I created something called the Infernal Beacon. It is a ritual detailed in the book, verbal, somatic, and material. It's a 10-minute casting time. You require a ritual circle, some gems, and an undetermined amount of volume of blood. The ritual must cover a 20-foot diameter, and you must be within 50 feet of the edge to activate it. So if you have to be within 50 feet to activate it, and if you leave that 50-foot area, then it's deactivated.
Okay.
When you activate it, a beam of light shoots up into the sky like this pillar of light.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a giant beacon. A giant purple beacon. And you roll a D100.
Oh.
On a 1, a portal releases a very upset demon lord who will kill everyone it can see.
Awesome.
On a 2 to 10, the portal opens and a burst of flames fill a 40-foot sphere centered on the ritual. Each creature in the area must succeed a DC 15 dex save or take 8d8 fire damage. On an 11 to 20, a portal opens in the floor, releasing 5 Belgura who attack the caster. On a 21 to 30, a portal opens with a red glow. Each creature within 100 feet of the portal must succeed a DC 15 strength save or be sucked 10 feet towards the portal. If a creature is pulled into the portal, they are shifted to the plane of fire and fall 100 feet.
Ouch.
On a 31 to 40, a portal opens, summoning a demon with a CR of 7. This creature will attack any creature it sees for the next 1 minute.
And then it gets tired and leaves?
Yeah, and then it just disappears. At the end, none of these effects... None of these effects last more than a minute. Oh. This is important.
Yeah.
A portal opens and summons a Solar who will smite all who it deems as evil.
Which could be anyone if you're playing with blood magic.
Yippers! Between 51 and 60, a portal opens. A creature within 50 feet must succeed a DC 15 dex save or be attacked by extra-dimensional tentacles that emerge. A creature takes 1d20 bludgeoning damage on a fail. This lasts for 1 minute. There are 5 of them.
Wow.
61 to 70, a blue portal opens in the floor and summons a water elemental that will attack any creature except the summoner.
Oh.
71 to 80, a glowing purple portal opens in the floor. Each creature who can see the glow must make a DC 17 wisdom save or be under the summoner's power of suggestion for 1 minute or until they are hurt. A creature who is not charmed must make the save each turn. So if you succeed, you've got to make it again next turn or get out of there. On an 81 to 90, a black portal opens in the floor, summoning a Baylor who tries to grab and throw any creatures it can into the pit. The only way to save a creature who is thrown in in is to defeat the Baelor within 1 minute of being summoned. 91 to 99, an orange portal opens, permanently releasing a cloud of 100 imps who will attack any creature the caster tells them to. If the caster does not give them a target, they will attack the nearest creature. They will attack as a swarm and have plus 11 to attack and deal 1d4 times 100 piercing damage.
Wow.
On a 100, a portal opens and an area of 100 feet around the portal is shrouded in darkness that cannot be seen through even by magic. Though you cannot see, you sense something moving around you. Then the screams begin. Each creature who mentally identifies the caster as an enemy is found skinned alive when the darkness fades in 2 rounds, with no sign of what did it.
Oh, that is wicked. That is one of those last ditch, oh my god, I don't know what is left to do. Everything is coming for me. Give it a try.
You would think that that would be how you'd use it, wouldn't you?
Well, there seems to be an awful lot of bad in there.
There is. That does not stop my party from weaponizing it.
Okay, fair
they
enough.
They tested it once or twice. I got a couple stories with this one. They tested it once or twice, and the player who had it eventually got a vision from the Raven Queen showing him his death, because he had been sent back. He had struck a deal with her to get revenge for something that had happened to his family, because he couldn't find them in the afterlife.
Oh.
So he was given a vision that was like, it was bad. It was really bad. They murdered everybody on his estate, and they stole the souls of his wife and daughter. So he then took off, went into there was a place called the Citadel. It's the greatest military fortress the enemy had. And it was a walled city unto itself. It had never fallen. Well, this player snuck into the city, spent some time. Now, this guy came to like 3 sessions and sat at the table while this other stuff was going on. Because in the background, he was in the city and he was, you know, spying on what was going on, figuring out what was happening, and he had the ability to turn into a raven.
Nice.
So he was flying around, he started to notice that certain guards had a special gauntlet, and that seemed to grant them special powers, like special authority. So he grabbed one, cornered him, and walked down the alleyway dragging the Knife of the Unliving, another one of my favorite items. It cuts anything as though it were butter, except living material. So he's dragging that through the stone wall as a form of intimidation, and he gets the glove. He then goes to the mage's college and goes, I'm here on the authority of the commander of the city, and I just need, you know, 5 or 6 of your, you know, 4 or 5 of your, you know, truant wizards. Don't give me the best, you know, like, this is just a small job, it's nothing. So he takes them aside and he teaches all of them this ritual under the guise that it will protect the city when the invading army of the enemy comes. But he took each of them aside and talked to them and rolled so well on some persuasion checks and convinced each of them that you will be the one who saves the city, because you will find the right people and to teach this to. You know the right people to make sure that the city is safe. So they all went out looking for people to teach it to that they could trust.
Oh my gosh.
So then the Baron left and rejoined the party and didn't say a word about where he'd been. Nobody really asked. They were just like, where, you know, like, you disappeared for 2 weeks. He's like, yeah, and? So, fast forward about 2 weeks, the the party has marched their army up on the citadel. They've surrounded the city, and they begun their march inwards. Suddenly, a blue beam of light shoots up in the city. A green one. The party halts their army, and then a yellow one, and then a black one. And then the city devolves into chaos as a solar 400 imps and 17 portals went off within the city in a matter of seconds. And for 60 seconds, that city became an absolute hellscape.
Wow.
And the entire party turned and looked at the Baron. But nobody ever asked him if he had anything to do with it, because they had plausible deniability.
Yep. That's because one you probably don't want to ask.
70% of the city died in 60 seconds.
Oh, that it is fantastic.
So the party, now realizing that this item had quite a few different uses, at one point, they painted a bunch of... They took a bunch of boards, they got them set up with the ritual, and the ritual's all etched in and in place on both sides of the board, loaded their airship full of them, opened the bomb bay door with buckets of blood and a mop, and would just slap the boards with the bloody mop and then huck them over into the enemy army of zombies.
Wow.
It was... an effective item. But it didn't come without risk.
For sure.
I'd like to just qualify that it was they were like level 19 or 20 when they were throwing things out of airships.
Fair enough.
I mean, I'm notoriously bad for creating homebrew items and tossing them in at my players. I've got a sentient magic sword going on in one of my games right now that's just content murdering wizards, but the party doesn't know that the soul in the sword used to be a wizard until they stuffed him in an item. So now he just wants to kill them all, and that's going to drive the person wielding it to want to kill more of these wizards.
Oh. Yep.
Luckily, those wizards are terrible, because I've essentially based the humans in this world on colonialist Nazis, and they are trying to wipe out all the other species so that it can be ethnically only humans on the continent.
I mean... historically accurate.
humans are bad for that.
Yeah.
And there are humans that, you know, are on the opposite side. Like, not all humans are bad.
For sure.
And the party's starting to realize, because they have this one NPC who used to be a human wizard, and she still has her wizardy powers, but she was left to die in an ogre cave, and the party was the ones that pulled her out. It's like, and then immediately after they got out, they were ambushed by reinforcements for the humans, which made her more angry, because they were sitting out here the whole damn time while she watched the rest of her party get eaten one by one by ogres.
Yep. Brutal.
You know, she's feeling a little bit of trauma. So, you know, when to find out that her boss had been sitting outside the entire time caused her to go just a little crazy.
Yeah, I think it would. Yeah.
She's like, well, I can't go home. Can I come with you guys? And she ties into what I'd consider my greatest failure as an item, but we'll save that for another day. What about you, Megan? Have you homebrewed any items or had a homebrew item given to you?
As for given to me, not that I am currently aware of. Unless someone tells me, that it's homebrew or I recognize it from something I've read, I wouldn't really know. I just kind of, I'm just like, okay, give it. Let me use it. Let me try and figure it out.
Your rapier in our last campaign was actually a homebrew one. It was a dagger when you stabbed somebody, turned into the size of a rapier, and then when you pulled it out, turned back into the size of a dagger.
Yeah, I found that out quite by accident when I meant to just poke the guy in his kidney as a warning, and you very clearly said, so the blade touches him, and I went, yes, and then he died.
Complete accident, and nobody blamed you for it. If I remember, they're just like, what the? he was like a terrible criminal.
Yeah, he wasn't very great. But yeah, that was a bit shocking. I expected to go to jail for that, not for the myriad of other things that almost got me in jail, but that one.
Oh, it was the circumstance that got you out of that one.
Yeah, I think so. Rescued a few people.
Yeah, he would have been good as a hostage or, you know, for information, but killing him is also not... You guys killed his buddies too, but...
Yeah.
Accidents.
It was an oops.
Just another one of the war crimes that you guys committed.
Yeah.
Why do my parties always commit war crimes? Why?
Why do you always toss us into a war?
I mean, that's very fair. And then I give you the tools to be very horrible people.
Yep.
There's all the tools to make mustard gas. I'm not telling you to use it. I'm just saying it's there.
Yeah. But really, if you're going to give us all these tools and ingredients, so to speak, do you expect us to not bake that cake?
Oh, that's just it. That's why I love giving out awesome items and homebrew things, because I want to see you be successful, especially once you identify what a player wants their character to do. Mm-hmm. Give them things that'll help.
Yes.
Especially late game. Like, if you're in tier 3, tier 4 play, fucking give them the +3 bow and the... Give them cool stuff and make stuff up. They want to be an ice ranger, give them a bow that shoots ice arrows. What's it gonna hurt? Not a white dragon.
Yeah, but it's still gonna be fun.
Yep. But those are some of my favorite homebrew items. Folks, if you have any... What are some of your favorite homebrew items that you've received in a game or had to deal with in a game? Let me know.
Yeah. We want to know. Because who knows? It might just give us inspiration. And then if you listen to our other podcast where we actually play, you could potentially hear it.
You can see some of these ridiculous things in action. Because we all know I don't believe in breaking the game. I just believe in increasing the math.
Yes. I was going to say increasing the difficulty for the DM, but increasing the math is a little more succinct.
You know what? If the bad guy needs to last another round, you give him another 20 hit points. Like, sometimes you walk into a situation and you realize that your party is all slinging like 50 hit points worth of damage every round, and you have this guy at 100 hit points, and it's like he's not even going to get to his turn to say the thing that I need him to say in order for this to make any sense. I need to double his hit points. He needs to have at least one turn.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You're making a good story. Sometimes you gotta cook the books. I mean, fudging die rolls is bad, and you shouldn't ever do it. As a GM, that's wrong.
But sometimes, I mean, as a GM, you're the one that's creating the world. I mean, sometimes you just gotta roll with it.
Yep.
Sometimes you gotta adapt and adjust for what's gonna make a better story.
Yeah.
Because you and the players have all invested hours and hours and hours and hours into getting to where you are right now. There is no point in you letting all of your hard work go to waste.
Yeah. Sometimes you just gotta sneak it in there.
But I think that about wraps it up for my top favorite homebrew items. I'm sure we'll have another list at some point.
Oh, I'm sure.
And remember, if you don't know what the item is, respond with lightning.